BPM Tips. Hello, this is Big Game Fishak from BPM Tips, and I'm very happy to speak today with Steve Towers. Steve is a seasoned practitioner with 35 years of hands-on experience in business process management, customer experience management, outside-in, and a high-performance organization. He leads the professional network within the BP Group. As a co-founder of BP Group Org in 1992, Steve developed the world's first and premier network for business process management and performance professionals. Thanks a lot for joining me today.
It's a great pleasure. Thanks for the invite.
Steve, could you introduce yourself for our listeners and tell how do you help BPM professionals?
Okay, will do. Yeah, that was a great summary, so I'm not going to bore the pants off people with an extensive list. But my career began many decades ago now as an industrial engineer, and I've always been charmed by process and always had the fundamental belief that process is everything. So it's not just when we think about it in a BPM context. Everything everybody does in an organization is process. And so business process management allows us to get to grips with that and apply science to what sometimes is not very logical as far as an organization is concerned. And so my work really revolved, as you said there in the introduction, around the BP Group. My last corporate incarnation was with Citigroup, and I was the head of technology and operations for EMEA. And we faced a lot of challenges back then, you know, several decades ago. And that was really the birthing of having a cohesive approach, which allowed you to look both at organizational strategy, operations, and all aspects of how people do business. So my life is bounded by the bpgroup.org. We're a not-for-profit. We work in terms of transference of knowledge and skills from some of the leading organizations on the planet. So we have the method. We go out there, we train people up. As a not-for-profit, we're not in people's faces all the time. We're not trying to market and sell. We work with in collaboration with many organizations on the planet, and we have a registration, if you like, data set of members of about 87,000, 88,000 now. We're in 116 countries, and we've got 25 partners around the world.
Awesome. Thanks for the great overview of what you do. Now I must ask question, what is the outside-in process and how is it better than inside-out?
Oh, terrific question. That goes straight to the heart of the matter, doesn't it, really? Of course, I came to process from that industrial engineering perspective initially, and then I went through sort of systems training and waterfall, did some coding, C++, COBOL, and all the rest of it. And it always seemed that we seemed to start our work, regardless of whether we were doing a big change or a small change, in the wrong place. We'd start it by trying to understand what the current problem was and then work away from the current problem towards a solution. And I was introduced to a whole set of thinking unrelated to BPM, which said, look, if we can define what success looks like and how success would be, not from a touchy-feely, soft and fluffy way, but from a very direct, tangible, scientific way, and then we work back from that success, and Amazon referred to it as working backwards, we can then create a much more suitable solution for whoever that customer might be. So outside in is the catch-all phrase, which really says, look, from our point of view of working in organizations, if we can define what customer success actually looks like, and not looks like, again, in a soft and feely way, but in a very tangible, mechanistic way, and having clearly defined that and articulated it, we can work backwards literally to the creation of a solution which would actually deliver success, not on an ad hoc basis, but in a sustainable way. So the difference there really from an outside-in process perspective, and it goes to the book that I'll make available to the folks who are listening in at the end of this session, Outside-In, which was published 6 years ago now, was really the distillation of a whole bunch of stories which talked around that theme. I know it works at a practical level in our organizations. But one caveat when you do get that book is I was tasked with, unlike some of the other books that I've written, my first one was Business Process Reengineering, A Senior Executive's Guide back in 1993. And some of those books are quite technical. Outside In isn't. I was asked to write a book for a CEO who would be travelling on a journey of approximately 2 hours. So my challenge there was a big font with really plain English with lots of cartoons. So if you'll forgive me for that when you read it, it certainly isn't anything that we might be more familiar with when we get our hands dirty doing BPM. It's written to actually appeal, if you like, to a top team who don't have to have any technical knowledge.
This is a great way of positioning your book. You know, how long should it take and how should it look like?
Yeah. And again, just going to that point about inside out is the methods that we surround ourselves with, and it isn't just in the domain of BPM, it's in every other aspect of process and systems and people and customers. A lot of those methods have simply been an extrapolation of the past into the future. And as we know, living in the sort of digitized customer age, those methods were not designed to be able to succeed in this sort of environment. So outside in works enormously well for a lot of companies on the planet, from both an enterprise-wide scale right down to a singular customer within an organization. So if we're in the IT part of the organization, for instance, our primary customers are those people who we're dealing with at a day-to-day level. Well, you can use the thinking and the process behind it to actually craft better solutions. So that's why I'm a strong advocate of outside in. Of course, over 6 years, the agenda's moved forward. Perhaps we'll touch on that in a few minutes' time.
I noticed recently one of your video trainings, and I cannot resist to ask, what can ducks teach us about customer experience management?
Oh, ducks, indeed. Yeah, I should never have come up with that particular analogy and metaphor, because it's haunting me wherever I go. But very quickly, for the benefit of those listening in, is a duck theory, as we sort of coined it. I think it was around about April the 1st when we came up with this, but it has a very rational justification. Was there's a lot of stuff talked about, for instance, customers and customer journey management, and customers' emotions and feelings and how they interact with our businesses. And we come into contact with lots of people traveling around the world, and some of those customer journey management people seem to be somewhat separated from the reality of the day-to-day mechanics of running a business, the IT systems, the people, the processes, the nuts and bolts of actually designing products and crafting solutions. And we were playing with this idea about why is there that disconnect between the customer-facing people who talk about customer journey management and the rest of us who are actually busy in our organizations, you know, building processes and systems. And so the duck idea was born, that the ones who are above the surface, if you like, the soft and fluffy duck, would be those customer journey management people. And of course, they're doing lots of work in terms of surveys and what the customers want and say they need and so on and so forth like that. But there seems a disconnect between what goes on below the surface, the legs and the muscles and the feet, if you like, which is the innards of the organization driving us forward. So duck theory is all about, look, customer experience management, business process management, they're not separate things. They are one and the same. And if we can view the whole duck and craft the whole duck in that context, then we'll get past that disconnect and we'll be able to produce more cohesive solutions much more quickly.
Thanks a lot. Now, from my side, no more mentioning ducks. Now, tell me about your CIM method and how did it evolve? I recall when it was, I think, 8 Omega.
Oh, goodness me. Right. Okay. So if we've got any diehards listening in to it being 8 Omega back in the day, just to give you a potted history, the birthing of the CIM method, you're quite right, revolved around a method we were using, 8 Omega. And again, a play on words, if you think about Six Sigma was very popular a decade or so ago. And 8 Omega went one better. What it was a more cohesive approach, an enterprise-wide approach to actually transforming organizations. And that approach had evolved in association with people like Computer Science Corporation and people like Infrim, who were all part of that network. And it was a broad business-wide approach, which sort of encouraged a better level of thinking about the enterprise. So there we were. We were working away with it, and we happened to be working with one of the Virgin companies in the US in 2000-2001. And one of the more astute people in the program, who was actually creating the sort of the enterprise program office at the time, said, "This is great. It's fantastic. It's structured. It works. It's logical. But it's missing something very important." So of course we said, "No. It's been refined and developed over a long period of time. It's of its time now. It's really a problem. Atomica does the business." And they said, "Yeah, that's the point. Does the business. But what about the customer? The customer's missing." And my response immediately there was, "Oh, no, the customer is implicit in everything that we do. The reason why we're doing work is to deliver customer success." And that CIO, as he was at the time, said, "Well, no, it's not good enough that it's implicit. The customer needs to be explicit." And that was really the birthing of how do we integrate the customer perspective? How do we begin to define customer success so that it informs all of our thinking? So we developed that in conjunction with Virgin, and for 4 or 5 years it was under wraps, it was under non-disclosure. And then in 2005-2006, we let it out into the world as CEM method, customer experience management method, sometimes referred to as customer expectation management as well, and released version 1 back in 2006. So again, the speed of change, if you like, the digital age that's upon us now, has meant that each year we increment the approaches, we integrate new case studies, we understand from those leading organizations how they're using the method, and then we increment the method. So we're now running at CM method version 10.
If you could share one and only one tip for people starting with customer experience management, if you could somehow summarize years of your experience into one thing that people should always remember, what would it be?
It would be around what does success look like from a customer's point of view? And of course, that's a very big question. Let's deal with three types of customer. We've got the primary customer, that's where the money comes from. The secondary customer, people are interested in the success of processes but not directly involved. So that could include regulators, management teams, and then internal customers. That's the rest, if you like. And when we talk about internal, we don't just mean within the organization. It could be partners who are within the supply chain who actually help us deliver success. Thinking about it at the primary customer level, because that's the easiest place to start in terms of conceptually thinking about it, is how do we define what success looks like for a customer? And classically, people have taken an approach by going asking customers what they want, which meant there's many studies being done on this, is that's precisely the wrong thing to do, and we don't have to go too far to rediscover some of those old statements coming out of Ford back when. If I'd have gone and asked the customers what they wanted, they would have said faster horses. So on that principle, one of the things that you're trying to do when you define a successful customer outcome is to figure out what the customer needs, even when they don't know it themselves. So for instance, within the CM method, we use what used to be referred to as the Apple Innovation Formula as one of the approaches, which allows us to very clearly articulate, and again in a scientific way, what the true needs of a customer are, even when sometimes the customer doesn't know them. Having articulated those as a set of objective measures, we can then begin to think about what do we need to do to deliver that success. So if I was encouraging the listeners to start in any one particular place, and I'll make one of the templates available for this, so we would say, look, clearly define the successful customer outcome. It's quite a mechanistic approach. It's an ABC 1-2-3, and it doesn't require us to go into meditation or have some great intuitive leaps. What it allows us to do is to get more scientific about the customer experience. And then in doing that, allow that successful customer outcome, if you like, the beacon on the hill, guide all our thinking about how we're actually going to craft that, how are we going to create it. So that, simply put, everything in the organization is aligned and contributes to that SCL. So the SCO would be it. The SCO is, funnily enough, it's the starting point. When we start the programs, that's what we set about articulating first, is it causes us to ask the question, what is the SCO? And then we realize a lot of the time, organizations have customers they should not to have. You know, so it's a case of, right, let's categorize the customers. Let's not segment them, let's categorize them, and categorize them by need, and create the SCO for those respective categories.
May I ask additional question, because you said that sometimes organizations have customers that they should not have.
Yes, that's right.
Deeper?
Yeah, give you a couple of examples of that, because of course we work around the planet with different partners. So frequently in the private sector, of course, we have a lot more choice over who is our customer and who we want to do business with and how do we align for their success. Sometimes, however, particularly in the public sector, there is an argument that says, no, we don't have a choice over our customer. Everybody's our customer. So I'll think of one example, the Internal Revenue Service in the US. And again, the discussion was, look, we don't have a choice. Everybody's our customer. So my response to that would be, is, well, do you treat everybody the same? And they go, well, we have to treat everybody in a standardized way. So my immediate response to that is, well, why? And they go, well, because it's mandated. And we go, well, where is it mandated? They say, well, the regulators tell us that we have to treat everybody the same. And, of course, my response to that, whether it's in the public sector or the private sector, and have a look at the regulators' rulings on that, nowhere does it actually say we have to treat everybody the same. What it does say is we have to treat everybody fairly. So going to the IRS example would be, so you do not need to treat everybody in the same way. What you could do is you could treat different categories of customer in different ways. So let's think of a set of needs, for instance. And I'm sure, like myself, most of the listeners out there will be people who diligently pay their taxes. And yet, we also know of in the press of people who get sent to prison for not paying their taxes. So you've got two categories of customer there. You've got some categories of customer who are more trustworthy than those who aren't. So why do we treat them the same? Why do we apply a rule, particularly as the IRS used to do, to treat everybody as if they are untrustworthy? When clearly I would fairly estimate 99.5% of us are very trustworthy. We do want to pay our taxes. We might not necessarily agree with the amount, but we understand in terms of living in a civilized society, that's an important part of our giving back. And so accordingly, could we not treat those trustworthy categories of customer in a different way from the untrustworthy ones? And the answer, of course, is yes. Now, it's not as simple as having two categories of customer. Customers have got different needs. So when we start to think about categorizing our customers, if we go to an internal perspective from an organization point of view, there are different sets of needs in the organization. And perhaps what we shouldn't do is approach them all those needs in the same way. So number one, we shouldn't be going asking customers what they want, because sure enough, they'll tell us. We end up creating something that they then seem suboptimal from our point of view, and is certainly suboptimal from a customer's point of view. We have to articulate what are our categories of customer and what are their real needs, and then what are we actually doing to deliver against those needs, even as I've already said, when the customer doesn't necessarily know what they are themselves. So that whole idea of customer categorization is very different from the classic idea of customer segmentation, where effectively segmentation was done by circumstance, your age, where you live, your lifestyle. That's a circumstance. What we do when we're going outside in is we categorize by need. We understand what the real needs are, and then accordingly those categories of customer emerge who have a collective similar needs that we can then deliver our products and services to.
Thanks, that was very helpful and very actionable. And the last question, what useful resources would you like to recommend to people interested in customer experience management and BPM in general?
There's a lot of good places to go out there, but part of the challenge of all this is that, besides there being a lot of good places, there's a lot of not so good places where people are just simply rehashing, you know, their interpretation of the truth, and there's no uniqueness or originality there. But there's a lot of originality there. Obviously, I would recommend bpgroup.org as a place where people can go and view the sort of things that we get up to and some of the clients that we work with. That's bpgroup.org. Again, we'll give you these links outside of the actual cast. There's also other locations where you can go and stay in touch with this whole evolution of CEM, customer experience management, and its integration, if you like, with BPM. Going right to that first point that I made was that process is everything. There isn't anything that isn't process. And therefore, when we're thinking about areas like, say, Lean, Six Sigma, a lot of the other approaches, enterprise architecture, it is all the same stuff. So what I've tended to do over time is build up and distill a list of a dozen or so locations that I know good to go to, where there's thought leadership, but there's also pragmatism there. There's an ability for people to be able to understand the communications and then network with those people who are involved in that. So, of course, we would point to LinkedIn. As some of you know, I'm the manager of the largest Lean Six Sigma group in the LinkedIn sphere. And people go, well, gee, Lean Six Sigma, that's not BPM or CEM. We go, look, it's all the same stuff. So get engaged in conversations with respectful sources. And again, what I'll do outside of this discussion is give you a list of the places that I go to. Some will work for you, some won't. Of course, my work these days tends to be at a very broad enterprise level, helping organizations transform their thinking. Whereas if your day-to-day activity rolling your sleeves up is down in the nuts and bolts of the organization, you may need to dig deeper. But nevertheless, I'll provide that sort of list of resources. And please, you know, if you find that you want to ask questions, you want to have a dialogue about it, you know, connect with me. That link will be there as well.
Thank you very much for lots of practical insights.
My pleasure.
BPM tips.